ground pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
All right, welcome to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Thanks for being here once again. Big, big podcast. As you might suspect, after a monster win yesterday for the Mariners, beating the San Diego Padres, thumping the San Diego Padres in just a rout, 16-4, the Mariners get the win over the Padres. M's improved to 30-21. Do you like home run highlights? I hope you do, because there's several coming your way. If you don't like home run highlights, you probably shouldn't stick around with this particular podcast, because there's a lot of them coming. So we have the highlights from the game, reaction from the game yesterday. We'll take a look at what comes up starting tonight. The Mariners take on the Padres for the 1-2. We also have bullpen banter. Didn't play it on its usual Monday, so it's going to play now. Charlie Furbush and Steve Johnson. Also, a great conversation between Aaron Goldsmith and Andy McKay. I think you'll enjoy this one. A little insight to what's going on in the Mariners system right now. It's great, great information. So that comes up in a couple of minutes as well. But first things first, let's get to the ball game. As the Mariners bounce back nicely with a win after being swept by the Minnesota Twins, and we're looking to break out the mini broom for the two-game mini sweep at the hands of the San Diego Padres. It looked like a good matchup. James Shields on the hill against Hisashi Iwakuma. Hisashi Iwakuma did his part. He was on his game early.
Iwakuma back with a 3-2. Kemp with a swing and a miss and a breaking ball down and away for strike three. Strikeout number one for Hisashi Iwakuma. That's it for Kemp. And the Padres here in the top half of the first.
The Mariners wasted very little time getting on the board.
Runners, their leads, they go. The pitch swung on, line drive into right field for a base hit. Cano, Ronnie, third hitting home. Up with the ball, Jankowski. The throw to third is cut off by Ramirez, the shortstop. Kyle Seager with a two-out RBI single into right field, scoring Robbie Cano. Around to third goes Nelson Cruz. And with two outs, the Mariners have a 1-0 lead.
With two outs, and that would be a theme throughout this game. In the second, a sixth spot put on the board, punctuated by a Kyle Seager three-run home run. So after the end of two, the Mariners already held a 7-0 lead, and they weren't done. If it wasn't broken up open before, it certainly was in the third inning, as Seth Smith would go yard for the first time in the game.
First pitch, here's pitch swung on, driven deep to right. That ball is crushed. That ball is out of here. Three-run homer, Seth Smith, and the Mariners have gone double figures. It's 10-0 Seattle. Wow, 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 and wow.
Very appropriate. That ball flew over the Boeing sign. It took off on runway 29er. Holy smokes.
A home run for Smith. It was 10-0, and the Mariners were still rolling. Franklin Gutierrez chipped in with another long ball.
Here's a swing and a drive deep to right field. Jankowski going back, looking up. Goodbye, baseball. Franklin Gutierrez with an opposite field home run down the right field line. His fifth home run of the year. And for the Mariners, their third of the afternoon. A two-run home run for Goody. And it's now the Mariners 12. And the Padres, nothing.
And then in the fifth, Seth Smith again, his second home run of the game.
The windup and the pitch, swung on, fly ball, deep left center field. Jay going back to the one, he tracked to the wall. Goodbye, baseball! Seth Smith does it again. His second home run of the afternoon, this one the other way, into the pen in left center field. Holy smokes! His sixth home run of the season. He hit number five, a three-run home run in the third, and a solo home run here in the bottom of the fifth for Seth Smith, and it's now the Mariners 13, and the Padres nothing.
and the capper.
Here is the 0-1 pitch. Swing and a drive deep into the gap. In right center field. Going, going. Goodbye, baseball. Home run number 5 on the afternoon for the Mariners today against San Diego. It's number 6 on the year for Adam Lynn. A 3-run home run by Lynn. The Mariners are just pouring it on. And it's now the Mariners 16. That's right. The Mariners 16 and San Diego nothing. And we're only in the bottom of the fifth.
1 in the first, 6 in the second, 3 in the third, 2 in the fourth, 4 in the fifth. The Mariners cruise control from there. They take the game 16-4. Here is Seth Smith after his monster game.
That was a lot of fun. Anytime you can get ahead early and kind of keep the pressure on. And you got Kuma out there doing his thing, and you just kind of roll through the game. It's a lot of fun.
You guys are doing what we've seen so often. We saw a lot of pitches in the first inning. You saw a run early, and then what happened?
We just kept doing more of the same, and we're able to get some guys on base and some timely big hits.
And you were getting the home runs, too. It's looked like something you've kind of been building to. We've seen some good at-bats of late. What's working for you?
Yeah, I've been feeling better. I've been working a little bit in the cage, just some mechanical stuff, and trying to get it ironed out.
Well, a monster day. James Shields, who took the mound for the Padres, began the day with a 3.06 ERA. He left with a 4.28, tied a career-high 10 earned runs allowed, his third shortest start of his career, as the Mariners really bashed Shields, chased him after 2 2/3. Mariners have been on a home run binge. Their last 26 games, they've cranked out 45 of them. That's more than Atlanta, Philadelphia, Kansas City, the Angels, and San Francisco have for the season right after the ball game. So, I mean, just unbelievable. 45 home runs in their last 26 ball games, and the numbers just really grow from there. Mariners have taken over the Major League lead in home runs. There were 8 hit in the ball game total as the Padres played some long ball as well. 8 home runs that tied the Safeco Field record. July 16th, 2004, Mariners and Cleveland combined for 8. And the Mariners and Padres yesterday combined for 8 home runs. Mariners bash 5 homers, 16 runs, 14 hits, and they drew 10 walks. 12th time in Mariners history, they go double digits in hits, runs, and walks all in the same game. So, I mean, I could keep going forever about the different numbers that came out of this game. There were so many. Hisashi Wakuma as well goes 7, gives up 4 runs. He could be aggressive, and he was. No walks and 5 strikeouts. Gave up 3 long balls on 90 pitches. Bullpen 2 innings, and that was it. Mariners 16-4 over the San Diego Padres. Here's Scott Servais.
The games are good to us.
You have an update like that?
Yeah, no, I can't say enough. Our offense showed up today right from the get-go. A lot of good at-bats. Obviously, the home runs were big. It's great to see, you know, against a pretty good pitcher. You know, obviously, Shields wasn't probably on top of his game today, but we made him work, took a lot of pitches, worked some counts, and then, you know, took advantage of it when we had guys on base. 2-out rallies, you know, a couple innings there, had 2-out, nobody on, and we just kept grinding, and you look up and, you know, we got a crooked number up there. So really good ball game. Obviously, Iwakuma, I think his second consecutive outing with no walks, which is huge for him. And he was sharp. You know, early in the game, thought split finger was good. He was using all of his pitches. So, you know, nice win for us. Nice bounce back after a tough weekend here.
Seth hit several balls hard yesterday and then hits a couple more pretty hard today. Just the power output from the team.
Yeah, no, obviously Smitty continues to have really good at-bats. You know, the doubles yesterday, I mean, the home runs today. Lynn found one. Obviously, Seager's, I looked up today, and I think I saw him hitting like 274, and I was thinking, oh, my gosh. You know, the first of May, I think he was hitting 174 or 147, something like that. So it says a lot for what he's done here over the last, you know, 25, 30 games, and really our entire club. You know, everybody's pitched in at one point or another, so great effort.
Talk talk so much about getting guys on and over and in and the conga line and everything else. Is the power surprise you from what you thought you were going to?
I didn't think we'd lead the league or be at the top in home runs. But then again, you know, we're getting contributions from everybody. You know, Dejo Lee chips in 7. I mean, Lind is starting to heat up. Smitty's got 6 or 7. You know, Cruz, Cano, kind of ahead of what Robbie usually does home run-wise. But it's come from everybody, you know. So when that happens, you know, good things can happen. And it's fun to watch. You know, it's not going to be there every day. That's why you'll continue to hear me talk about the quality of bats, grinding the at-bats, because those home runs are not going to be there every day. But I certainly enjoy it when they are.
Yeah, why not? Why not enjoy the home runs? The Mariners, the major league lead in home runs. And something that I find pretty interesting, Mariners now have scored 256 runs this season. That's second best in the American League. 70 more runs than this point last year heading into June. That is a lot. The most runs the Mariners have scored in April and May combined since 2003. So prolific offense going right now for the Seattle Mariners as they put up really, really big numbers in this ball game. The May has been sensational. How about Cano, Cruz, and Seager for the month of May? They combined, I mean, it's just been monsters. They batted .344 combined with 18 home runs, 62 RBIs, 23 doubles, 33 walks, and 59 runs scored. Those numbers just for the three of them, which is really remarkable. I mean, they're out homering full teams. They had more home runs than the Braves during the month. I mean, it's remarkable what they did. And the Mariners as a team, they had a giant May. 45 homers, just one off the Red Sox total for most in the big leagues. In the month of May, the Mariners hit .283. That was fourth best in the big leagues. Their on-base percentage, .346, just behind the Red Sox and Cubs for the month of May. The Mariners slugged .477, second best in the majors, just behind the Red Sox. The Mariners' OPS for the month of May, .824, again, second best behind the Red Sox for the month of May. I mean, it was that kind of month for the Mariners. They scored 156 runs, second most behind the Red Sox. Just a giant offensive month for the Mariners in May, and they look to continue the momentum into June starting tonight. So here's what we're looking at tonight scheduled. Now, there's some rumblings that James Paxton, who was scratched from a start yesterday, all indications are that he's going to come up with the Mariners today. And as I tape this, we're not exactly clear what that is going to look like, what he's coming up for, what role, when he's going to pitch, when he'll be activated. All those questions right now are kind of just circling. So I imagine when you listen to this at some point tomorrow, we'll probably have a more clear indication of what exactly is going on and the corresponding move and everything along those lines. But I can talk about what we have in terms of probables for tomorrow. Felix Hernandez is scheduled to go 4-4 with a 2.86 ERA. He came in with the second best ERA in the American League to his last start and had a start where he struggled. He's going to take on Christian Friedrich, the former Colorado Rocky, who's pitched well in 3 starts for the Padres, including his last time out against Arizona. In Arizona, went 7, gave up 3 hits and no runs, walked just 1, and fanned 5. So he's pitched well so far this season for San Diego. So again, all eyes will be on Felix. He's scheduled to take his turn. Last time against Minnesota, went 6. Gave up 8 hits and 6 earned runs. Gave up a homer, walked 1, and fanned 6. That was on the 27th of May. So he is scheduled to go again tonight for the Mariners. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, that's for sure. Okay, I think you're all set for tonight. I think we covered yesterday. A lot of home runs, a lot of great highlights, a lot of numbers. I think I'll stop there with the numbers, although there's about a billion more. There's so many. It's one of those games and one of those months and one of those seasons so far for the Mariners. Okay, right now we're going to hand things over to Aaron Goldsmith. Great conversation with Andy McKay. Here it is.
Well, right now, this is going to be great. We are joined on the phone by the Mariners farm director, Andy McKay, kind enough to give us some time out of his very busy schedule. And, Andy, I hear we are catching you on the beautiful drive from Clinton, Iowa, onto Chicago. Is that right?
That is correct. Just spent 5 days with our Clinton team and heading back to Chicago to fly home.
Now, right now, the Mariners farm system, looking at simply at the standings, are doing very, very well. The Rainiers in AAA are in first place. AA Jackson Generals are in first place. Clinton, a game outside of first place. What is it that you're seeing that has, from an organizational standpoint, Andy, that has led to all the success among the affiliates so far this year?
You know, I think there's a lot that goes into it. You know, really from the front office down to the guys in the minor leagues, down in the trenches doing all the work. You know, our strength guys, our analytics people, our training staff. So there's a lot going on, but I think, you know, there's a couple of key concepts that have really been powerful for us so far. And I think, you know, for me, the number one thing is that we talk about ignoring the talent. And what that means is that, you know, we have players in the minor leagues that have a lot of talent, but it's that understanding that talent doesn't win baseball games, and you have to convert that talent into usable skill. And, you know, it's easy to get caught up in talent, whether it's an abundance of talent or it's a lack of talent. But the reality is that there's players in the big leagues with all types of talent levels. The issue is skill. So our job is to convert the talent into skill. And, you know, and when you look at the skills that are important, you know, for me, it's winning a baseball game. And so teaching players at a young level how to win a game, just like you would teach them, you know, how to run the bases and how to hit with two strikes, you have to teach them what it takes to win a baseball game. And there's a lot that goes into that. But if you make it your top priority, hopefully we can continue to, you know, send our major league team you know, skilled players that can actually go into Safeco and help the team win a game.
Well, Andy, as we're talking with Andy McKay, the Mariners farm director, I think that's a wonderful concept and something that when you see teams that it seems like year in and year out have a top-tier farm system, when we have a chance to talk to players from those organizations, and the St. Louis Cardinals are a team that comes to mind right away, a team that it seems like every year their farm system is just stocked with talent. There's this idea of learning how to win at the minor league level when so many times winning at the minor league level, at least for these young players, can sometimes go on the back burner to simply making sure they get their couple of base hits a night or their ERA is under a certain point so they can climb the ladder and eventually get up to the major leagues. How big of a culture shift have you found it to be so far this season for you in your first couple of months during the regular season for these minor leaguers to kind of start with some of these pretty, it sounds like, Andy, some pretty broad swings in kind of the idea of the culture for the minor leagues for the Mariners system? Is this something that has taken as much time as you would have thought, more time or less time? How have you felt that it's gone so far?
You know, I think our guys were ready to embrace it, and not only our staff but also our players. And, you know, winning is a lot more fun than losing. I know it's kind of a cliche, but winning is an awful lot of fun, and it's nice to be able to fist bump at the end of a game. And, you know, again, the point that we always lose sight of is that, as you mentioned, getting your couple of base hits or keeping your ERA at a certain number does not equate to winning games. And we have to develop players who know how to win. And, you know, luckily, you know, within the organization, having the big league team in first place and a AAA team and a double A team and Clinton right in the middle, but even, you know, Bakersfield, I believe, has won 7 out of 10. They just won a series from the first-place team. You know, the results came fairly quickly, which I think kind of re-ingrained and reignited our guys that what we're trying to do is actually working. And so it's kind of given them the confidence that they can believe in this plan and that it will work. So that's been great.
Andy, a few moments ago you mentioned the word analytics, and we have seen the Mariners shift defensively more than most teams so far this year. They are above the league average considerably in Major League Baseball. And we know that you and Jerry DePoto have worked hand-in-hand in terms of kind of translating those shifts into the minor league play as well, especially in AA and AAA. Can you talk us through the process for teaching the shift to positioning and the certain situations in the upper levels of the minors?
Yeah, but we're, you know, we've done it all the way down. We do it in extended spring training, where, by the way, we beat the Angels yesterday and beat Lincecum in the extended game. But we're shifting all the way down at the bottom of the of our system, and it does take work because you're having players play in places that they've never played, and so your cutoff and relays can look different. Having that awareness, you know, there's plays where all of a sudden third base is left open because your third baseman's playing shortstop, and you know who's going to cover third if the ball starts getting thrown around a little bit. So, you know, we spend a lot of time. We actually 2 days ago in Clinton, our early work was all of our cutoff and relay assignments out of our various defensive alignments. And, you know, it's just, it's going to become a new normal within the game. And seeing players stand out in traditional straightaway positioning, I think, is going to become a thing of the past sooner than later.
Andy, is that data hard to come by, especially in the lower levels, in terms of who to put the shift on against?
It is a little bit, but, you know, you play teams more and more, and you know, there's players that walk up to home plate and you can just watch one pitch and you know exactly where the ball is going to go. Other guys take a little bit more time, but we've done a good job with our front office. They've been providing us with usable data, but you know, and there's no doubt it's easier the higher you go to get more data on players to feel a little bit better about what you're doing. But, you know, we've given our managers the green light to do whatever they feel they need to do at that time. And, you know, sometimes you're going to shift and you're going to get burned by it, but I have no doubt in my mind that at each level, at each affiliate, we're in the positive in terms of taking away hits because of our shifting.
Talking with Andy McKay, the Mariners' farm director, and Andy, before we let you go, would love to get your thoughts on Edwin Diaz, who at this point a few weeks ago had made the transition from the rotation for AA Jackson into the bullpen. And the numbers so far, Andy, as a reliever, have looked awfully good. 8 appearances. Has given up just 3 hits, an unearned run, 14 punchouts over 9 1/3 innings. What have been your early takes on Diaz as a reliever?
Well, I think kind of like everybody else who's watching it all, it's pretty overwhelming, and it's hard to deny. It's even hard to question whether or not it's working. And, you know, he's a guy that, but even as a starter, I mean, there were some overwhelming starts in there too. And, you know, we've created flexibility for the organization, but we've also created flexibility for his career in terms of he really has established that he can do both of these things at higher levels. So, you know, everybody's excited. Everybody's on board with what's going on, most especially Edwin is. So that's been great, and it's just nice to watch. Because sometimes you try things like that, and it blows up in your face. And I'm sure we will do some other things that might end that way. But this one so far is going very well.
And finally, Andy, would love to hear just how much you're enjoying this job for yourself. First time as the Mariners farm director in your first season. A lot of new faces for the Mariners. And we know, Andy, we saw you coming and going in spring training. Most of the times you had a uniform on and you were always going to some backfield. So you were staying very busy. And I'm sure that has not changed now that the season has started. How much are you enjoying this job?
You know, it's crazy. But sometimes crazy can be perfect. And I love it. And I love everything about it. Sometimes I feel like I'm a kind of a human science project of lack of sleep and large doses of caffeine, and kind of turn you manic at points. But, you know, I'm doing my best to maintain. I'm a coach and I'm a teacher, and that's what I love more than anything. And, you know, I'm not going to let myself get too far removed from being with athletes and trying to impact them, even though the job obviously can take you away from that at times. But, you know, when I'm on the road, I'm in uniform, and I'm in the dugout, and I'm, you know, working with our coaches, and I'm watching our players up close. I'm watching how our players interact together, how our coaches interact with our players. And, you know, but I'm also just caught up in trying to win a baseball game. And that's fun to me. And I think that's something I hope I never get too far removed from. So it's been great, and couldn't be happier and proud to be a Mariner.
Well, Andy, we are so appreciative of your time and letting us be part of the science project that is Andy McKay. So thank you for joining us here on Mariners Magazine, Andy.
All right, thanks, guys.
And now it's time for Bullpen Banter.
Hey, we're back again. This is Charlie Furbush, yeah, coming at you again. Another edition of Bullpen Banter. Oh, man, lovely day here in Seattle. And my guest today is Steve Johnson. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, very well.
All right, hopefully I didn't scare you with that intro, but I've been doing this show for a little while, so hopefully just trying to break the ice. Where did you grow up, man?
Grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. Born and raised there and got to play for him a little bit.
Yeah, so all right. Well, you said, is it Baltimore? Is it? Did you go kind of, I would say Baltimore. You know,
yeah.
That's
a common thing. Okay. Yeah, you kind of, if you're from there, you kind of say it with a D. I don't know how that comes about, but it just happens where you say Baltimore and everyone else says it like that, but everyone who's not from there thinks it's pretty weird.
Yeah, so that's, you know, you're true local if you say it that way. Since I got some inside information from our lovely radio voice, Rick Riz, your dad played in the big leagues. When did he play?
87 with the Pirates, and then was with the Orioles, 89 to 91, then was with the Tigers up and down, 92-93.
So he's got some time. His name is Dave.
Yes.
Who was your first big league strikeout?
It was Don Kelly.
Don Kelly. That was a former teammate of mine.
2012.
DK, he's a good dude. I'm glad you struck him out, though. What'd you get him on, a heater or what?
Heater. I went, fastball, throwing the slow curve, and then went back up.
Speaking of the slow curve, I got to ask. First off, I think it's one of the most effective pitches in baseball. You can't just throw a 62-mile-an-hour curveball just, like, with ease. How'd you get it down that low?
It's not usually 62. It's normally around the 66 to 68. Still slow.
Yeah.
The secret is throwing it as hard as I can.
Yeah, okay.
And not being able to get it any faster.
Nice.
I've tried. I've tried to get it in, like, the 75 range, maybe have both. It just, I throw it really hard. It spins good. It just, the way I throw it, it just kind of comes out really slow.
I love it. I absolutely love it. It's like, you know, everyone's pushing for the radar gun these days. Let's see how slow we can throw. That'll really get their timing messed up.
That's kind of been my theme with all my pitches.
So. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, well, I think it's working to your advantage. What is your most embarrassing moment on a baseball field?
Most embarrassing moment would have to be in Oakland, 2012. Weeder set up for the intentional walk. I did the whole, you know, let's just throw it easy in there and threw it, and it hit the backstop. You know, that's when Oakland, they were in the playoff race, so they had a lot of people there, and they got on me pretty good. So.
Okay. I think we have the exact same story in Oakland for me, which was actually the weirdest thing. Also in 2012, I had to face Josh Reddick and intentionally walk him, which I was not exactly happy about. I was kind of in the game to face him, but exactly. Like, oh, you got to walk him. So the first one I threw on the money. Second one, a little low. Third one, like 40 feet spiked off the catcher's chest. And I didn't want to do that again, so the fourth one I threw to the backstop. Right. Runner on second base. Gets the third, walk him to first, get pulled. Next guy K's him up, so get out of it. It's not a fun feeling.
No, it's a terrible feeling. I did it on the first pitch, so the guy at second got the third, and I had to throw three more.
Oh,
so
I got progressively worse. Yeah,
I got better. I just said, you know, I'm going to throw it hard and pick up my leg the whole way, not slide step. It was just a combination of everything. It's hard to miss a 6'6 catcher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Wieters is a big dude. Do you have an actor that would play, like, a movie about your life? Who would that actor be?
Just to throw it out there, he's kind of, he's acted before. I'll go Justin Timberlake.
All right, Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. I have no basis off of why, just that, you know.
Feel like, he's awesome.
Right,
yeah,
he was,
I mean.
In a baseball movie once, I think, so it's all good.
I almost had you as a Ryan Reynolds type of guy.
Yeah, I mean, I could throw that out there too, but, you know, that's... That's fine too. We go both.
More
we could
diverse.
Combo. They could go both. You know.
There you go.
Maybe he's too busy with the music. We'll have to fall back on Ryan. Well,
did you play an instrument? Were you how into music were you?
I did way back when.
I used to play the trombone. So
I tried to be different, and everyone was going like trumpet and trombone, and I went violin.
It's so, like, the hardest instrument to learn.
It was hard. I stopped after 2 years. Okay. I should have played piano. I have big hands, but I just went with the violin and just kind of rocked it out for a little bit.
So what is your favorite big league city to visit?
Well, before, when I was in Baltimore, I didn't get to go too many, but here was where I first got caught up, in Seattle. I really liked it. The hotel was awesome.
Yep. So, welcome home, man.
Yeah. it worked out pretty well. I like it here.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I love it here too. So what is your favorite home-cooked meal by either your mom or dad? Is that a Baltimore special?
No, it wouldn't be. I mean, crabs can't be a home-cooked meal. Crabs, okay. You go pick up and
bring them home.
So, yeah. But, you know, it's like there's nothing better than a good grilled cheese and soup.
Oh,
you know
okay.
what I mean? Something simple. I had tomato soup to dip or cream of chicken, something. Enjoy that. It's something simple, you know, just, hey, and plus it's not that hard to make, so it makes it easier on them, too.
Let's say we're in Chicago, and we happen to leave dinner and walk by a lovely, lovely establishment that has karaoke.
Okay.
Do you have a go-to song that you're gonna melt the people's faces with?
Go-to song would be tough. I think I'd go with like a Call Me Maybe.
Wow.
Go and just absolutely rock it out.
That's a great call. You could pretty pull your phone out and be like,
exactly.
Call me maybe.
You know,
really act it out.
Really go for it. And you have to. If you're going karaoke, you're singing a song like that, you gotta go. Yeah. You gotta go off.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
When Edgar Martinez retired October the 3rd, 2004, there was a huge surprise for him. That Commissioner Bud Selig would step up to the microphone and say, from henceforth, the designated hitter award in the American League would forever be known as the Edgar Martinez Award.
He played his entire career right here in Seattle, became one of the all-time greats in a Mariners uniform and the best designated hitter ever in the history of the game. I'll never forget number 11 walking down the steps and out of our view for the final time in October of 2004.
Because of your record on this night, the Designated Hitter Award for the American League will forever be named the Edgar Martinez Award. Congratulations.
I came to this land with a dream. That dream was realized here in Seattle, the best city of this great country. You fans were the biggest part of that dream.
See you later!